Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one.
So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love!
The best Giants talk in the Bay is on 95.7 The Game. Reaction to every pitch.
Miller throws. He got him with the fastball. Miller's pointing at all the Reds.
Every home run.
High drive! Left field!
You're listening to 95.7 The Game.
And every big play. A little slow roller. Chapman.
It's your fix for Giants baseball.
It is a dream come true, but it's a very recent dream.
The Orange and Black Weekend Wrap.
Woo! Hello there, and good morning to everybody out there on this fabulous Saturday, August 1st. Oh, first of the month. I got to pay my rent. Ooh, that's not going to be fun. Well, that's a great way to start my Saturday off on a sad note. But hey, we're going to talk Giants baseball as well. Sam Lubman coming at you here again. It is the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap. Giants lose 7-0 to the Padres last night. But if it's on a service that nobody has, does it really count? Because it was on Apple TV last night, and who actually watches these Apple TV games?
In the woods.
There you go. And so that voice right there that you just heard is my co-host today, Dan Devone, joining me again after doing some double duty this week. Dan, you had to go on with Guru yesterday. You had to take on Willard and Dibbs again in the crossover. I want to talk about that in just a moment. But yeah, how you doing this morning, Dan?
I'm doing well. You know, I mentioned this with Guru yesterday at the start of the show that initially I really wanted to be the number one because I'm coming from a television background, one being where you are, the driver.
The A-chair, yeah.
But I'm so comfortable here at the number two. Like, I think I'm in my happy place right now.
I like you, to take credit for that.
You do you. And yeah, exactly. And I just sort of get in, throw my little jaw, stay here in the dunker spot. And I'm so happy to be where I'm at today. I enjoyed every moment, obviously, with Guru, but I'm in my happy place right now.
There you go. Well, I mean, that if we want to, you know, go behind the scenes here a little bit in terms of some radio jargon, you know, A-chair, the host, the driver of the show, setting everything up in and out of segments versus you, the B-chair, you're just kind of playing off of what I throw at you. And, you know, you and I, we've both done both positions here, Dan. And for me this year, this has been, I mean, I drove the show last year.
You're a natural number one.
Well, I drove this show last year, but this year has been the first year they've been letting me drive the morning roast. For those who don't know, obviously, I produce the morning roast. You know, I'm the building block of that show, as some might say. But driving a show it's a lot harder than being the B-chair because you really do have to be thinking the entire time where you're going to be steering a show, what's going to be coming next, playing the times right, all that kind of stuff. Whereas, like, you know, the other day on Thursday, I walk into the station here, and we get a text from Shasky, guys, I'm not feeling well. I think it's been going through his house lately. I mean, that happens when you have a toddler. Yeah. So hopefully, Shasky, you're feeling well. But so he wasn't feeling sick, which does happen. And so an hour before the show, I'm like, well, I guess I'm not producing today. But Spinelli was in. I sat in the B chair, and it's easier to fill in on a moment's notice in the B chair because you're just basically responding to whatever your A chair throws at you. I do think it's harder to slide into the A-chair role last minute when you weren't expecting it because it's harder to kind of formulate a plan in that situation.
Well, even if you have time, I just find, because initially I always wanted to be in the driver's chair or the one or the host, but I find that it takes a while before you sort of find your lane and your niche. I think that your personality, you're more conducive to sitting in that chair. Like you're somebody who is an obvious one.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Well, it's fun. I mean, I learned from the best. You know, I did shows with you. You were one, and you just wow. it just fits,
I mean,
on you like a glove.
First talk radio was very different to me. It was very new. It's just something on my bucket list that I wanted to do. But now I'm just, go ahead, Sam. You drive this puppy and just cue me. Cue me when you're ready.
I'll be cueing you all morning, Dan. That's how we do it here on the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap. Though I do want to start off with, for the second week in a row, Dan, I got to start off with a smidge of some breaking Niners news. Everybody's okay. No one got in any accidents this time on the Niners. No one in the Niners got in any accidents. We will get into the accident that did take place over the last week in a little bit.
I get a Giants analogy with that, but go ahead.
Okay, but Parag Marat is heading out of the Niners. He is going to Leeds United. This is per Adam Schefter, broke just about 20 minutes or so before, so sorry, 35 minutes before the show. Per Adam Schefter, after 25 years with the 49ers, Parag Marat is departing the organization to focus full-time on Leeds United and Rangers FC, as well as other sports efforts. League sources told ESPN the move was in the works for a little while, but is being formalized today, per sources. For those who don't know, Parag Marat is the, I don't really know what I would describe his official title as, but he is the 49ers salary cap guy. So whenever you hear about the 49ers restructuring contracts and figuring out ways to get under the cap and give Nick Bosa and George Kittle all this money that may not count, that may count, NFL CBA is all a bunch of fake words to me, if you ask me. That is Parag Marat's doing.
He's been good.
Yes, he has been very good with the salary cap. In an era where the Niners have had so many high-priced players, he has done a great job at really helping the Niners keep the band together.
Exactly.
So over the last few years. So, and of course, the first text we get from Shasky on that is good, overrated.
Which, really? Okay.
He's not a Parag guy. But Shasky's got very strong opinions on the Niners, rightfully so. He lives for that team. So, yeah, I do want to break that news, though, a little bit. Parag Marat leaving the 49ers for Leeds United, which, for those who don't know, I believe J.D. York has an ownership stake in Leeds United. So, not a shock that that's where he's going there. So, that's how our show starting off is, with more 49ers breaking news. Giants, however, that is what this show is about. Let's get into it. Giants lose 7-0 yesterday. And again, Dan, it was on Apple TV, and I don't have Apple TV, so I didn't really get a chance to watch it. Was following along on my phone, though, doing what I could to keep up what was going on. And Carson Wisenhunt got knocked around a little bit last night, about 3 1/3 innings.
Yeah, he got tagged.
Yeah, gives up 5-6 runs. Just did not go well there. And the reason why it's kind of an important start to see Carson Wisenhunt out there is because, Dan, we are going to see this pitching rotation change a little bit over the next couple days. Robbie Ray probably going to get traded. He had a great final start on Thursday night. Tyler Mahle, even, who's the starting pitcher today for the Giants, he could even be on the trading block. He could be on the move in the next couple days here. So Carson Wisenhunt is going to get a lot of run in this rotation.
Yeah.
And so he's going to have up nights like he did the other weekend, last weekend against the Angels, where he had a pretty solid outing on that Friday night. And then you're going to have outings like last night where he's going to get roughed up a little bit.
Yeah, you know, and it's disappointing because you need one of these young arms to pop, right? You need somebody. And obviously, there's a maturation process and you have to exert some level of patience. But you just hope, whether it's him or one of the kids that's yo-yoing back and forth, just for the sake of the Giants and their future. And you thought that maybe Wisenhunt, and it's not to say he's not on course to potentially be that guy, but that was a major setback yesterday. And I guess, and I obviously defer to people who know these sort of things, but I guess his changeup is obviously his out pitch, but apparently he doesn't have anything to supplement that with.
Like, no, he's a two-pitch guy right now. He's a fastball changeup guy, and the changeup is good, but the problem with the fastball is when it comes into the low 90s and you don't have that ability to truly locate it, you're going to be a vulnerable pitcher.
Yeah, so that's interesting, and I think just getting back to Mahle and just talking about the trade deadline, I think there's no doubt that he's out the door, and the fact that he's been pitching well of late only bodes well for San Francisco, and obviously Robbie Ray doing what it is that Robbie Ray's been doing and lowering that ERA. Although I was reading this article where it's like, obviously a team that's going to trade for Robbie Ray will do this. They'll vet him and they'll go through this as far as looking at his numbers. His walks are a little bit, you know, and his strikeout ratio isn't necessarily where you'd want it to be. So while he's going to fetch you a bag, I think it's a little deceptive when you look at sort of his numbers and his ERA that jump out to you. And obviously he's been so effective of late. But nevertheless, I think Mahle and you would just like to see that Carson Wisenhunt now getting an opportunity would do much better than he did last night. Not a good sign.
Yeah, focusing on Robbie Ray, the walks thing, this is something I remember bringing up last year. When Ray got off to that great start, that all-star caliber start, I mean, he did earn that all-star nod last year, and that was great to see. But something I kind of pointed out last year, unfortunately, was that walk rate that you mentioned there, Dan. And there's a lot of situations last year where, yeah, guys were getting on base via the walk, and he was really good at getting out of trouble there. You can't just consistently play with fire like that, though, and not get burned. And towards the second half, he got burned a little bit. Again, not like disastrous levels, but Yeah, that is a very valid hole in his game, Dan. And we've seen we've seen outings this year where Robbie's cruising along for 2, 3, 4 innings, and then all of a sudden that fifth inning comes along. He walks the first two guys, and an inning starts to go sideways there. It is a flaw in his game, and it is why he is probably a 2 or a 3 starter at best. But he's still a left-handed starter who can strike guys out, who can get guys out in other ways. That carries value at this trade deadline because pitching is always at a premium. And that's why Tyler Mahle is being floated around. I don't think you're going to get a massive return for a guy like a Tyler Mahle, but teams are going to be interested.
Yeah, and just to get back to Robbie Ray, well, the walks are problematic. The thing about him that you have to keep in mind is that he has the guile to get out of it. Now, yep. If it's a younger pitcher that's giving up walks, he could just explode, right? Like, it's, oh, man, I got ducks on the pond again, and then he just completely unwinds. He has the wherewithal because he has that veteran sort of, you know, ability to get himself out of those jams. So while it's a concern, I think also the fact that he's been around the corner and back is something that bodes well in terms of his trade value. It's concerned. Another guy that I'm sure we'll get into, but Harrison Bader was also somebody that I heard Philadelphia was interested in because he had played in Philadelphia.
Really?
He has history with Philadelphia. They could use an outfielder, and they were eyeing Harrison Bader. So, you know, while we can laugh and giggle at the fact that this coconut was on a scooter running into a fire truck down at the Balboa Cafe, there is a sort of a serious overtone that this guy could have actually provided something for you in return. On what I see is right now, there's no inroads for this guy to play center field. Not with the emergence. I we can get into Grant McCray. He's become my new favorite Giant.
Oh, I love Grant McCray. He's a fun guy, too, just to chat with. My first legitimate exchange with him was back in spring training. He saw me wearing my Miami Hurricanes jacket, and he's like, oh, yeah, I grew up in South Florida, you know, and so we talked a little Canes football together for a little bit, and you know me, Dan, if you want to talk Canes football with me, you're aces in my book there, so, but yeah, I like Grant McCray, and I think Rizzotto had the best line when it come to Grant McCray. If only he could hit.
Well, he is a little bit more.
Yeah.
A little bit. He's going the other way.
I didn't realize he got his first hit just a couple games ago of the season. I didn't realize he had an offer.
No, his first home run.
His first home run. Sorry, his first home run. Okay, that sounds more correct. Yeah.
No, he's actually been going the other way. Hey, listen, man, just give him some reps because, to your point, he's got a little toot. I like that. There's a self-confidence.
He's got some swagger to him.
Yeah, I like that on my baseball team.
It was funny, after... What was it? I guess the 24 season, Steven. Grant said at the end of the year that he was excited about the outfield because it was going to be him, it was going to be Jung-Hoo Lee, and he mentioned someone else, but he didn't mention Elliot Ramos. And our guy, Ruderman, it was Yaz. Yeah, he's like, Yaz is... So Grant's like, yeah, we got me, we got Yaz, we got Jung-Hoo Lee. We're going to have a great outfield next year. This is in 2024. And our guy, Steven Ruderman, who will be calling in at some point
Ruderman
in this show.
Ruderman replay. Ruderman getting a mention in the first hour.
I want to give Ruderman some run today with the trade deadline coming up. I want to hear him, all of his trade deadline takes. He might be the A-chair for a segment today, Dan. But he was just so angry afterwards. How's Grant McCray going to put himself above Elliot Ramos? I was just like, dude, relax. All right, he probably just mentioned. No, he should have said that Ramos is going to be in there. He's not better than Ramos. And so... Well, I'm curious to see where Ruderman is at on Grant McCray.
So speaking of Elliot Ramos, and this is just reading way too much into it, and because we have a 3-hour show, I may as well go here as fodder. But Ramos got pulled from last night's game. He played.
So did Arias, yeah.
And so Arias had cramping, right?
Yes.
So I don't know. If you're trying to add things up, is there a trade in the world? Did they have conversation? Is Elliot Ramos out the door? And obviously that's what you do. You're not going to risk injury at this point.
I mean, there are people freaking out about Robbie Ray taking a start on Thursday night, even though he wasn't slotted to be traded anytime soon. You know, it's that time of year. It was 2017, going way back here, when the Giants had Eduardo Nunez. They had acquired him from the Twins the year before.
Yeah.
And then the camera cuts to him. This is in 2017. A year later, the camera cuts to him around the same time of year, approaching the trade deadline. And the camera cuts to Nunez just hugging everybody in the dugout. And Hank Shulman, who was on the Giants beat at the time for the Chronicle, he's since retired, does some stuff for MLB.com. He tweets out, Eduardo Nunez, hug watch. Because when guys start hugging guys in the dugout, that's when you know, he's out of there. So it's kind of those are the things you start to look for nowadays. You know, when a guy comes out, is he hugging everyone in the dugout?
Yeah.
You know, is he giving high fives, handshakes, stuff like that? But again, it was on Apple TV last night, so we have no idea what Arias did. But again, it was cramped. The Giants were losing 7-0. Probably
two
one of those
hits.
Things. Probably one of those things. Hey, better than no hits.
Yeah.
Shout out Dylan Cease, who couldn't make it happen. But
yeah, I think getting back to Elliot Ramos, I just think that the more you read about what's happening, especially in the American League, where as much as, you know, left-handed pitching, as you mentioned, is a premium this time of the year, also are big right-handed bats. A guy, at least, who has the potential of somebody from the right side of the plate who can do damage. There's a lot of outfields in the American League, which is tightly bunched as far as wild cards and playoff positioning. So there's a lot of value with Elliot Ramos. I'd hate to see him go.
I mean, I'd hate to see him go, too. And we talked to Justice De Los Santos of the Bay Area News Group yesterday. We'll hear from him on this during the show. He's got this whole thing that came out in, you know, Bay Area News Group, whichever, East Bay Times, Mercury News, whichever one of those you subscribe to. He's got a piece in it that came out yesterday, so I encourage everyone who has a subscription to go check it out. He basically did the case for and against trading Elliot Ramos, because I think there's good arguments for each one. And he is a young player. He's 26. He's got some pop, very athletic. He's improving on defense. He's a guy that can hit anywhere in your lineup, and he's under team control till 2029.
Yeah, that's huge.
That's a stupid valuable player to have right now. So why would the Giants give that up? Well, as you just said, Dan, there's a lot of teams that need outfield help right now. Looking around the league, I look at teams like the White Sox, who are in the mix. They need outfield help. Cleveland, I think, could absolutely use a guy like Elliot Ramos. I think he would be a perfect fit for that team. The Tampa Bay Rays, I don't know if Ramos would want to go there because that catwalk already robbed him of one home run. I don't know if he wants to go back and take another risk of having that call mixed up there. I think the Yankees are in the need for an outfield bat because they don't know what's going on with the health of Aaron Judge right now. Hey, Elliot Ramos, can you go replace Aaron Judge? The Mariners, another team, the Twins, Phillies. Phillies just need hitters. Like, the Phillies apps just need anybody who could swing a bat they need. The Braves, I think, could be a fit. So, like, there is a lot of teams out there that could use an Elliot Ramos. And there are teams out there that probably could have used a Harrison Bader. Unfortunately, that's just not going to happen there. And, oh, my God, getting back into that Bader thing. That's interesting that the Phillies were in on him.
Yeah.
He hasn't done... Really, ever since that grand slam against the A's, he hasn't really done anything. The plantar fasciitis flared up, and that is a frustrating injury, having that happen. But this guy, you got it. He was supposed to visit a foot specialist this week.
I can't help but laugh.
And it's just the first thing I thought of, Dan, when I saw what time it happened at. It happened, I think, 2:04 was the official time is when it happened. I just thought of, here's your obscure reference of the day, that How I Met Your Mother episode from season one, nothing good ever happens after 2 a.m.
We're talking about 2:04, yeah, thank you. 2:04 in the morning.
Nothing good ever happens at 2 a.m. I mean, again, I know he's on the injured list, so he's not playing the next day, but at the same time, like, dude, there's a day game the next day. You're out bar hopping at 2 in the morning, drunkenly riding scooters around. Like, this team gave you $20 million spaced over 2 years to play baseball for them. The San Francisco Giants are paying you to play baseball for them. This is straight up on the level of Jeff Kent popping wheelies on his motorcycle during spring training back in 2002. The only difference is Harrison Bader can't say that he was washing his truck this time because there are people there to see it happen.
You know, maybe
he could say that I was trying to wash the fire truck. No, if you were washing, you weren't washing the fire truck. You can't say that as an excuse. So, like,
he did this in college.
He did do this in, those Florida Gators, man. Can't trust them. Bad times in the swamp.
Here's where I want to go with this. So, on the heels of what happened with Kyle Shanahan, where you broke the news, was that last Saturday?
Literally, to start the show, it's like, good morning, everyone. Let's talk Giants baseball. How about that win? Oh, hold on a second. Literally, Dan, as the show open was playing is when I got the Twitter notification from Adam Schefter being like, hey, check out this Nick Wagner story.
And what was the first thing that popped in our heads? Was like, did that happen this morning? Was that last night? And I was like, no.
It was 11 days ago.
It was 11 days ago, which is really odd, which has led to this sort of, why did you sit on it? Was there a cover-up? What are you covering
up? At least this
up?
Time it wasn't 11 days, yeah.
But it's almost the polar opposite, but that of the San Francisco Giants, who almost unveiled so much information so as to let the public know how much of a bozo this guy is. Granted, it's just the facts, as they say in Dragnet, just the facts, ma'am. But it's interesting how they control sort of the PR vibe in one camp as opposed to the other. San Francisco, and there's a lot of people that still believe, especially at the network level, that there's some sort of a conspiracy here. There's another shoe that's going to drop because why would you sit on something for a week? And here the San Francisco Giants are like, here's everything that happened to our bozo center fielder. So if we move off of this guy, you'll know why. And also maybe to drum up some public sentiment as to some sort of, you know, guns out and knives out and directly pointing at one Harrison Bader. It's interesting how things are handled in one camp as opposed to the other in terms of too much information and not enough information.
Yeah. Again, you bring up the Kyle Shanahan comparison there, and that is a very good comparison there. And again, the Niners did explain why they waited so long, and this is from the ESPN story on it. According to multiple sources familiar with the Niners' thinking, the delay in announcing the crash came because of multiple factors. They considered the timing of the accident to be during a dead period in the NFL news before training camp began, but they also wanted to give Shanahan time to deal with the ongoing concussion symptoms. The team was also hoping to gather more information while allowing the authorities to work out any lingering legal details, the sources said. It's that middle line there. They wanted to give Shanahan time to deal with the ongoing concussion symptoms. For your head coach of 9 years going into 10 years, I absolutely do, like, I understand and sympathize with that reasoning there. That's a guy you want to protect because of how important he is to the organization, how important he has been to the organization, how important he will be to the organization going forward. There are certain allowances that people in that kind of a position get. Maybe it's fair, maybe it's not. It's the world we live in. For Shanahan, it's understandable why you would want to maybe parse some of these details as they come out. Harrison Bader is not on the level of Kyle Shanahan. This is a guy, it's his first year in this area. He does not have the cachet that Kyle Shanahan has. So when he does something knuckleheaded like that, it's all going to come out right away because you haven't earned that protection. Now, there is a question of just, this thing happened Sunday morning. I didn't see him at the ballpark on Sunday at all, but that's not unusual. You know, sometimes guys are, you know, the media, we only have so much availability in the clubhouse and around these teams, especially on Sunday. Sunday, it's not as busy as often. I mean, some guys take infield and stuff on Sunday, but, you know, sometimes guys are more behind the scenes on Sunday, whether they're getting treatment or they're in the weight room or they're in some other area that we as media are not allowed to go to. So it's not uncommon for me to not see a guy on any given day. I mean, there's days I don't even see Logan Webb in the clubhouse. That doesn't mean that Logan's off somewhere else, you know, gallivanting somewhere. It just means that he's in a different part of the ballpark. So yeah, I didn't see Bader that day. Talk to some other people. They didn't see Bader that day. I don't know if Bader was around the ballpark on Monday. But yeah, then Tuesday comes along, and that's when it all gets broken. Yeah, it is kind of curious as to why, I don't know, maybe they didn't have the details on Sunday. Maybe they didn't even know on Sunday when, because again, this is at 9, 10 in the morning is when we're all showing up to the ballpark. So 8 hours have passed since first contact with the fire engine. But Monday.
Sounds ridiculous.
But Monday, I guess we didn't hear about it. Maybe they're just trying to figure out the details of it. I don't know. It's, listen, I'm just glad it didn't take 11 days to get this story out.
You know, so I got a question for you. So I was talking to Ken Luttrell yesterday, who was producing our show. And Ken, who also has access to the, we all have access, but he's down in the locker room, maybe not as frequently as you. And he was saying Bader's just not good people. He was just, maybe I'm putting this out there for public consumption and I shouldn't, but Ken was just like, yeah, you know what? Not necessarily the most popular, or maybe it was a personal thing. He's like, yeah, I don't know. He sort of blew me off and just created an image of he's not the most likable personality. I'm curious as to your sort of
interactions. Again, I haven't really gotten a chance to get to know him as a person this year, so I don't want to speak too much on who he is as a person. I mean, there's other players who I've gotten to know who, you know, I think are great people, like Casey Schmidt, absolute delightful human being to talk to. Matt Gage, this is somebody I brought, like, you know, I'll stand for Matt Gage any day. Why? Because I just think he's a cool guy to chat with. You know, I think I've said it on the show, Dan, you've asked me how I cover this team and stuff like that. Like, when you get to know these players personally, it makes you more of a fan, I think, for me. Like, I become more of a fan because I root for the team, but I also root for these players as well. I never got a chance to truly chat with, talk with Bader. Part of that is how available he is, stuff like that. So I can't speak to him as a person, but, it's kind of hard for me to speak for him as a person because, again, I just don't know.
All right.
But... yeah, I saw him occasionally interacting
with the Giants.
I don't think so. It's that the fit with the Giants always seem interesting. I have seen him chat. So his locker is in the same corner as Elliot Ramos, Jung-Hoo Lee, and Drew Gilbert. I have seen him interacting with Drew Gilbert during the season, you know, veteran player, chatting with the younger player, one of those things. I'll say this. I think Bader's a guy who definitely enjoys being around his teammates. It's just my theory of him. I think he likes being around his teammates. I don't think he's a guy who really is like itching to chat with media types, which, you know, he's not the first guy to be like that.
remember actually the first time I met Bader was back in spring training. He had just gotten done with the World Baseball Classic, and he was showing up for his official start of spring training, or he was returning to spring training, and I was, you know, waiting outside the clubhouse because I was there a little bit early. So I was waiting for him to open the clubhouse, and he walks up, and I just went up and I was like, "Hey, Harrison, nice to meet you. I'm Sam Lum, 95.7 The Game." "Oh, hey, nice to meet you, man." And then he just kept on going.
Well, that's Ken's experience.
Yeah. I was like, "Oh, cool. Nice to meet you, man." And, you know, just, I mean, I'm not expecting, like, "Oh, wow, Sam Lum, man, it's so nice to meet you." I wasn't expecting that. But, you know, I figured, yeah, we're probably going to be talking to each other throughout the year. Should probably get to know him now. And then it's like, "Oh, well, you know what? Maybe he's just not a guy who likes talking to the media."
Well, I think he, let's just say he was at 100%. I think that in the pecking order, I'd rather see a Drew Gilbert, Grant, McCrae sort of combination there. I mean,
yeah.
The little we saw of him, and again, in the beginning of the year, nobody was hitting, but he was one of those guys that wasn't making any contact. So,
I mean, I always thought that the fit...
any chance you outlaw scooters?
Oh, I will know. I won't. Seeing as I use a scooter to get to work, no, please don't do that.
Yeah, I mean, Hunter Pence sort of, you know, is a guy that I think sort of brought the scooter to San Francisco, but it's just, or maybe you can make an addendum for certain players. Like, if you have that history at the collegiate level, maybe there's
maybe
a clause in the contract. Like,
the fact it was probably one of those rent-a-scooters, too. Like, you got to get your own scooter. Don't
Bob Melvin used to ride one.
I know it. You know who else used was Gabe Kapler.
I
remember one time I was walking back to my car just when I was parking at Pier 30. So walking back to my car at Pier 30, and I turn around and see a guy scootering towards me, and it's like, wow, it's kind of a big guy. And then who scoots by me other than one Gabe Kapler?
Yeah.
So it's like, "Hey, Gabe, what's up?" "Hello, Sam. This is my scooter." That's not what he said. But back to Bader really quick before you hit the break. It's just the fit with Bader never really made sense to me on this team when you had a lot of younger outfielders coming up already. I mean, when he got to a rough start this season, and there's a lot of, "Where's Drew Gilbert? Can we see more Drew Gilbert?" And since Bader's gone down to plantar fasciitis, I like seeing Drew Gilbert out in center. I like seeing Grant McCrae out in center. I like seeing Victor Barrichello out in center. I like seeing Jonah Cox out in center. All four of those guys have potential to contribute to the Giants' future beyond this year and next year.
The future!
Harrison Bader is not a part of that. Harrison Bader is a place filler, and for 1 year, I would have been okay with it. For 2 years,
yeah,
it's just, he goes from space filler to space waster at that point from a roster building standpoint. And he could have undone a lot of that by performing better at the plate. But at the same time, when you're rehabbing an injury and then you have something like this happens, what it tells me is just how seriously are you taking it? Now, he's a professional athlete. He's been at this for a long time. My guess is he does take things seriously. But we on the outside looking in, if we're looking at this, the perception we're getting is, do you even care, dude? You're supposed to be getting healthy to get back on the field, and then you do something like this. Do you care? Let's keep this conversation going on the other side. Plus, Giants got some deadline decisions they got to make in the next few days. The guy making them, Buster Posey. How big of a weekend and how big is Monday going to be for Buster? Because, you know, he hasn't played, Dan, since 2021, but he still needs to hit a home run. So hopefully we'll do that. We'll continue on the other side. It is the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap. That's Dan Devone. I'm Sam Lubman. We're coming to you live from Laughing Monk Studios. Laughing Monk, righteously brewed in San Francisco. More Giants talk coming up next. Brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good.
Now back to the best Giants talk in the Bay. The Orange and Black Weekend Wrap on 95.7 The Game.
We are 95.7 The Game. We are also the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap. Got our new guy, Victor, learning his way on the board. He's getting there. Poor Victor, man. He drew the short straw this week. So, my normal board op on the morning roast, Carter Chickering, he is going out on baby leave again. Baby leave part two for him.
Oh, they're having another one.
No, he's not having another one. I guess it's just part two of caring for the current one.
How does that work?
I have no idea. But unfortunately, poor Victor, he drew the short straw. He's going to have to be filling in on the morning roast with us a couple times this week. It's Victor, I believe you're with us Monday and Friday this week. And then then Ken drew the short straw for the other 3 days. So enjoy the wake up, Victor. You'll never get used to it. He's trying to get on there. Risotto's helping him out.
I'm here.
There you go. There he is.
Yeah, of all the buttons you want to figure out is
it's the one that makes you talk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Make that mic go live. Forget about everything else.
I'm putting you on the spot now so we can get this all over with now. So that way when Joes do it next week, you'll be ready to go.
Oh, it's all good. Let's do it.
There we go. Awesome. So that's Victor, our new guy there. He's been picking it up pretty quickly, though. And so, Victor, I mean, he's one of the guys. We were supposed to do a weekend with the Ballers tomorrow, actually. The morning roast was. Unfortunately, that fell apart, you know, just scheduling-wise. Didn't work out. It happens in radio. and Risotto's going to be a part of it too. But yeah, Victor was one of the guys who was going to jump in and be our video people for it. But unfortunately, it did not come to pass. But way to step up, Victor. That's how you get points here at the station.
I got your back, man.
Anyway, talking Giants here on the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap. Sam Lum and Dan Devone. We got a couple of directions we can go here. Because again, last segment we talked about, you know, some Ramos trade rumors, and of course the knucklehead of the week, Harrison Bader, crashing his scooter into a fire truck. I don't know, was the fire truck parked or not?
I don't know, but so he was at the Balboa Cafe.
Yeah, he heard he shut it down.
Intimately familiar.
I guess it's right around the corner from Carter right Chickering's place.
Well, it's right next door to a fire station.
Yeah,
literally two doors down from a fire station. So that thing could have been parked because they're parked all over the street. They usually have them out in the driveway. Yeah. I'm assuming what he did is, I want to say that's Greenwich, I believe. I think he probably peeled out of Greenwich and was going down the sidewalk, and that's usually where they have, they're sort of blocking the sidewalk because they're usually in the quote-unquote driveway is where they have their big fire truck rigs. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But
Risotto, it looked like you had a nugget to add on.
Yeah, according to SFist, the news website.
SFist?
Yes. Yeah. They said that it occurred in the Cow Hollow area in the vicinity at Greenwich and Fillmore Streets.
Oh, there you go.
And apparently after he crashed into the back of the fire engine, the wheel rolled over his foot. So he got run over by the fire truck.
Come on, man.
Wait a minute. Well, let's just break this down. First of all,
this is the part of me is trying to figure out. So, like, was the fire truck moving or not?
So they are the only publication to report this, but apparently, the wheel rolled over his foot. I don't know what that means.
So it had to have been moving.
He got transported via ambulance. He was on the next day. He had a scheduled appointment in Indianapolis for his plantar.
Oh, was that Sunday he was supposed to be there?
Yeah, for his plantar.
Oh, I thought it was supposed to take place during the week. I know it was supposed to be that Sunday.
The next day he was supposed to be for his plantar fasciitis, and he ended up making the flight and still getting to Indianapolis.
Yeah, he was going to his flight, essentially.
Ah, so that explains why I didn't see him in the ballpark then those last couple days. Now the mystery's coming together. All right.
Well, not really.
No, not quite. But
I mean, how do you get run over?
Well, I know why I didn't see him the next day then. I guess that part
of the mystery. So are you telling me he got run over by a fire truck? Is that essentially how this breaks down?
He's on the phone right now. But yeah, that is what it sounds like. You know what I'm shocked about, Dan, in this world where everyone has a camera on their person?
Yeah.
How's that video not come out?
Well.
You know, so at some point we got to maybe get that. But I just, Harrison, just so disappointing. So disappointing there.
Kind of, you know, it's par for the course if you think about this season.
I mean, really is. It really is. And what's frustrating about this, Dan, is it's another list. It's another item on the list of all these reasons why the Giants this season have just, it's almost, they take it a credibility hit, so to speak. And like, this is an organization that you would look at, even through the ups and down times, they still operated like a credible baseball organization. You know, they still operated and comported themselves as a team with respect.
It was the model for a while.
It was, you know, and this season, you're seeing that just not happen at all. It's with Bader, you know, with this whole accident here, and it creates an image of just like, are you taking this seriously or not? There's the Rafael Devers, you know, finger wag at Tony Vitello, and there's been times when Rafi's just not run out ground balls. Our boss, Matt Nahegan, loves posting videos of Rafi not running hard to first base on balls.
By the way, did you see that? He had a little fister to right field right in front of Tatis 2 nights ago, and he did not leave the box.
No, he didn't.
Like, Tatis had
That's the one that Matt Nahegan, he took a video of and posted. It's like, how is he not running out? And there's another one against the White Sox. There is a pop-up in the infield. He just kind of, you know, trotting down the first base line. The ball ends up dropping because the infielders lost it in the sun, and he almost got thrown out on it. You know, a ball that was up in the air for a good, you know, 10 seconds, it felt like, and Rafi beat it by a step. And so it's moments like that that reflect poorly on this organization. And then that gets into the guy with the largest contract this team has ever given out in its entire history, and that is Willy Adames. And the frustrations with Willie have been very well chronicled over the last year and a half. And I have tried to be a big defender of Willy Adames, as I said at the beginning part of the season, Dan, you know, I am, you know, I'm going down the ship on with Willy Adames. You know, I'm dressed up like gentlemen. We're going to go down with this Willy Adames ship. That's not the quote. It's dressed in our Sunday best and prepared to go down the ship like gentlemen. That's the line.
Yeah, that's really hard to do these days because there's, you know, again, the Gatorade celebrations we've all gotten tired of. There's the moment where he forgot the outs against the Dodgers. There's a moment a few weeks earlier when he was getting a little too friendly with the Rays players on the bases. And then that gets us into what happened last night on the broadcast where, again, I ended up seeing the replay, but word got out, and let me get the actual quote here so we have it right here. But word got out basically that Willy Adames has not really been working with Ron Washington on defensive drills. And the quote that was said on the broadcast last night, Wash says it's been a little bit harder for Adames to commit to the work day in and day out. That's when talking about doing the defensive drills that Ron Washington does before games. Now, he usually does these drills, Dan, before a lot of fans show up so they don't see him, but I've posted videos of them on Instagram. I got videos on my phone. Basically, he does these quick, you know, 5, 10, 15 minute long exercises with his infielders to, you know, yeah, just basically get them warmed up. Little drills that hone their defensive skills, play hops, stuff like that. I see Bryce Eldridge out there every day working with him. You've seen the results out there. I've seen Luis Arraez working with him every day. We've all, of course, seen those results. Casey Schmidt is a frequenter of working with Wash before games. Jonah Cox has even been taking a lot of time. I love watching Jonah Cox work with Ron Washington because Cox just seems so excited to be, you know, getting trained up to be an infielder.
Not bad at third base.
No, they throw him in at second base a couple times too, Coxie. I mean,
that's where I think he's going
to
end up.
He wants to be that super utility guy. Justice De Los Santos was on this yesterday. He said as much that Cox wants to be that guy. So you see a lot of guys with an enthusiasm on this team, a lot of guys on this team with an enthusiasm to work with Ron Washington. I want to get Rizzotto's take on this too, because Rizzotto's been to a few games that I haven't been at. I've seen Willy Adames working with Wash maybe a handful of times this year. Rizzotto, how often do you see Willy working with Wash?
It's occasionally. I mean, it's not as much as, let's say, Casey Schmidt or Bryce Eldridge, especially Bryce Eldridge. Bryce has been great at first base, and I think it's a testament to his work with Wash. But he's not there very often, to your point.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the bigger question I have, and the name that you guys have left out, is Matt Chapman doing it as well. And the reason why I ask, mm-hmm. is this something that's more sort of dedicated and aimed at the younger players who need the work, and the veterans don't necessarily take it as seriously?
No, I've seen Chapman working with Wash, too. Now, again, Chapman, I think, gets the ballpark before a lot of other people.
Every day he's working, Chapman.
Yeah.
He is, okay.
Oh, yeah, I've seen him taking the most infield work before games as well. If I were to like list the guys on this team who's like, I do not question your work ethic for one second, that list is Luis Arraez, it's Logan Webb is on that list, and Matt Chapman is on that list.
Isn't Elian Ramos up there?
Ramos is up there too. I mean, he's putting a lot of great work in, I think. Not with Wash, because obviously Ramos isn't an infielder, but Ramos is up there. Jung-Hoo Lee, I think, has an incredibly high work ethic, which you've seen with the work he's put in right field. You know, to your point, Matt Chapman, I do not question his work ethic at all whatsoever. But Dan, like,
no, it's not the work ethic. I guess I'm asking specifically, is he doing work with Wash?
I believe so. Again, it just might be at a time when I'm not seeing it, but I have seen him working with Wash. But I see Chapman doing so much work before games that.
So then Adames is the only guy who's not doing it on the same sort of consistent basis.
And Rafi, I see Rafi about as often with Wash as well, though Rafi. From what we expected him to be at first base last year to what he's at now, it's hard for me to really shake a stick at the results. Like, you know what, Rafi, if you're not working with Wash every day, but I'm still seeing you play passable defense at first base, that's fine. With Willy Adames, though, it's not just the fact that, you know, he's not putting in this work as much with Ron Washington. Again, he's putting in some of the work, maybe not all of the work, though. But then he goes out and just some of the errors he's had this year was he had that flip play on Thursday night in the ninth inning where he tried to do a flip to Basabe at second. No, it was Wednesday. Wednesday, he does that flip to Basabe at second.
A punt.
Yeah, it was just like 10 feet above him. Or like Bryce Eldridge would have had trouble bringing that flip down. When you see defensive gaffes like that, Dan, it's just, again, we asked the question the last thing about Bader. When you crash your scooter, it makes me wonder how seriously you're taking this.
That's for a two-year, $20 million player. This is the highest contract that this team has ever given out. And these are the reports that we're hearing about him. Like, that is not good, Dan. That is not good at all.
No. That's not what you want to hear. The other thing about him in terms of his offense, and I think his defense has always been sort of, it's not suspect, but he's always been sort of mediocre.
He's not going to be winning any gold gloves.
And that's the way he was with Milwaukee. But then again, you think about Arise, who was not even mediocre. I think he was considered as sort of a liability in the field. And then he's worked at his game and obviously worked with Washington, has got much better. So you could say that it could have been the same for Adams had he put in the work with Ron Washington. But I guess the point that I would make out when it comes to him and his offense is like, he's such a Deadpool guy. Like, at some point, obviously, people are going away, right? Like, they'll just pitch him away knowing that he has no plate discipline with that pitch. And if he could just learn to hit Oppo, go to right field or go to right center field, you know, like you wouldn't, as young as Eldridge is, you couldn't pitch him away because he has great power and he likes to go.
He had a great opposite field hit on Thursday night.
But Adams, you just wonder, like, where's the discipline? Where's the ability to adjust to where it is that they're pitching you? And do you have no ability to want to go to right field? Are you just simply one of those guys who's just like, yeah, I'm Deadpool. That's what I do.
It seems like half the time, Dan, when he steps into the batter's box, his goal is, I'm going to plant one in the seats. That's just what it seems like half the time when he gets in there. And that's either, generously speaking, you're trying to play hero ball. You're trying to put the team on your back, maybe a little bit too much. You're, you know, a little too much try hard, as Tony Vitello likes to say. Or if you want to look at it in a negative fashion, it's, you're just trying to pad your stats. And if it helps the team, great. But you're just trying to pad your own numbers because you want your numbers at the end of the year to match up with all the other numbers on your baseball card. And yes, Willy Adames did snap the 30 home run drought last year. In the last day of the year, they put him in leadoff spots. They want to give him a chance to do it. And it was important for Willie to snap that drought. He wanted to end this whole nonsense of the Giants not having a 30 home run hitter.
Well, Bonds.
Yes, not having a 30 home run hitter since Bonds. And like, that was really awesome that he ended that. But how he did it, though, it's a lot of, he had a big home run push in September during a time when the Giants just weren't in it. And so when a lot of your numbers come in a time when it does not matter, sure, the numbers look cool at the end of the day, but what are those numbers doing to serve the team right now? And when your numbers are more seem to be serving yourself than the team, then yeah, you're going to get the side-eye treatment a little bit. And then when you're not working with one of the best infield coaches in the game today, again, it's just all these things stack up to where, like, Willie, you're expected to be a big figure and a big player in this clubhouse, and these actions don't suit that.
What are the chances that Adames, Chapman, and now that we're here, now that it's D-Day, what are the chances of one of these guys moving in the next 48 hours?
Absolutely zero. I hate to depress Giants fans on that one.
And that's because there's no takers?
I don't think there's any takers on it. I think I think it was Rosenthal yesterday sent out the... No, it was someone from CBS Sports. I'm spacing on the name right now, but someone from CBS Sports put it out yesterday, basically that, yeah, the Giants are getting no interest on that. And
even for Chapman?
Well, I mean, if Chapman was healthy right now, I think it's easier to move
him. Well, he's going to be back. I mean, it's not as though he's out for the season like Casey Schmidt.
Yeah, but I mean, I think if...
When is he? I thought he was coming back to...
Potentially this weekend.
Supposed to be last weekend, so...
I mean, I don't know. I've also heard they want to do him on a... I've heard so many conflicting reports on this. And Rizzotto, I think maybe Thursday night before the game, Tony said something about Chapman's health. If you want to go back and find that pregame scrum and see if we can get some updates there.
Get on it,
but,
please.
Making our guy do some producing here on the fly. But I've heard last weekend it was, yeah, he's going to be out longer than people want. Justice was on yesterday. He said there's an outside chance he could be playing today or tomorrow even. So I don't know what's going on with Matt Chapman, but I think if he was healthy, it would have been a lot easier for him to get dealt.
I don't know if the health should factor into it if he's going to be back and everyone's, it's just the abductor and it's not as though we're talking about an ACL and Achilles heel tear. So I don't know.
I'm not saying it's impossible, but my guess is that's going to drive a lot of suitors away.
Yeah, that's tough.
With Devers, again, it's just that And that's the thing, like these kind of contracts that these three guys have rarely get moved in season. You know, that's why, you know, it's the Giants, I say, they rescued the Red Sox last year when they took this deal. And no one's coming to save the Giants for two reasons. Reason number one being what I just said, these kind of contracts do rarely get moved in season.
Yeah.
Teams right now, if they're adding at the deadline, they're adding a guy who's either going to be a free agent after this season or maybe there's another year of control after that. You very rarely see teams in contention, gunning for a playoff spot, adding a guy with five more years of control like that.
Nine.
Yeah, like, because Adames has five more years. This isn't the same
as... talking about Rafi.
Oh, Rafi, yeah. I'm talking about Adames, Rafi, whoever. Like, there's a difference between adding a guy like Ramos, who's got 3 years of team control, but on the cheap, versus a guy like a Devers or Adames, who's got more than 3 years for more than cheap. Like, it's not cheap. It's more expensive than cheap. I don't think those words really work together.
Yeah, I think, boy, it's tough because it becomes an albatross at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I really think so.
The Giants got three of those now.
Yeah.
And then reason number two why I'm not very optimistic these guys are getting moved is there's a lockout coming. And we have no idea how long that lockout's going to be. I'm bracing for the worst. You know, Ruderman, when he gets on at some point, he'll say that I believe there will be baseball next year. I don't know how many games. But we also don't know what the salary structure is going to look like. And so taking on a fat chunk of money at a time when... at a time when how money is utilized in Major League Baseball is going to be changed a lot. A lot of teams I can't see wanting to jump on massive contracts like that for players who... I mean, this isn't so much for Rafi, but for William Chapman, aren't playing up to what those contract figures say.
So when we think about the trade deadline, obviously Arise, Robbie Ray, maybe Elliot Ramos. I mean, the potential of Jung Hoo Lee's been bantered about. I don't see that. But so we're talking about those guys, and I think anybody in that bullpen, and I mean anybody, could go. The thing about trading pitchers is that you need someone to replace them with somebody, right? So you can't just get rid of that entire bullpen. You need somebody to come in and close games. You got to fill out a roster. So I'm just sort of curious as we sort of prognosticate as to what's going to happen here in the next 48 hours. Because while they say nobody's safe, I mean, realistically, it's going to be a couple of guys for certain. And then I think just about everybody in that bullpen. Do you see any surprises that we're not talking about at this point?
The one that would probably surprise me the most would be a Jung Hoo Lee trade, actually. That's one that would kind of surprise me. Just because, I mean, what his value is to the team now or what his value is elsewhere. I think the Giants are very intent on keeping him. But if a team did come in and swoop in and be like, yeah, we want Jung Hoo Lee, that would kind of surprise me here.
What do you have to give the San Francisco Giants to turn their head for Jung Hoo Lee?
Oh, starting pitching or bullpen help. Like any team that comes to you with starting pitching or bullpen help, you have to take what they're offering seriously. I think so there. As far as the rest of the team, I mean, obviously Robbie Ray, gone there. Tyler Malley could be a guy. You look in that bullpen, Caleb Killian's a name that could pop up.
Those dudes are all gone. Like, if you can get somebody for any one of this, there's not one person that has any security in that bullpen.
The only guy in that bullpen that I would keep right now amongst the healthy ones, actually, okay, there's two guys. Dylan Smith and Eric Miller. I would hold on to Eric Miller because I do believe that Eric Miller can be a very, very good setup man. I think he can be a good spot time closer. I've seen it from Eric Miller. I'm probably higher on Eric Miller than most. But like, don't clutch Eric Miller like with a death grip. You know,
no,
if a team wants Eric Miller.
A lefty
reliever that could close, that has the ability to close games, that has a lot of value on the trade market.
I read it.
95.7 The Game, breaking news.
So the 49ers keep interrupting.
Oh, more Niner news.
Sam.
The red and gold weekend wrap.
It's all you, Sam.
Yes, this is just coming in from multiple sources here. This is from Adam Schefter regarding Ricky Pearsall. After lengthy discussions with doctors, 49ers wide receiver Ricky Pearsall is expected to go season-ending surgery on the nagging PCL injury that dates back to last season and will be out for the year, John Lynch told reporters. Pearsall is expected to make a full recovery in time for the 2027 season.
The injuries just keep coming, Dan.
Well, Ricky Pearson, didn't we sort of anticipate that?
Well, I think when Deebo Samuel showed up yesterday or Thursday, that kind of was the writing on the wall there with the future of Ricky Pearsall. You know, it's unfortunate, Dan, and so it's not a great look for the Niners right now that he spent all offseason rehabbing this thing and it didn't get anywhere. But yeah, it's Dejon Stribling. No pressure, but just needs you to be wide receiver two this year.
Well,
he could be.
I like younger players. I'm all about rookies, man, so I'm excited about that.
So that is, again, I think expected news there. Ricky Pearsall, season-ending surgery there. Is this it for Ricky? I mean, they got one more year on him. Are you closing the book on Ricky? Are you putting the dreaded B word bust on him?
No, I mean, you can do that. I mean, it's no issues with it, but no, you're not. When you say, is this the end of it, meaning you're going to release him? No.
No, I guess is, do you have any faith that...
No, well, the faith, all that crap is out the door, but he's going to come back to camp. He's going to be 100%, and let's see what you got, and can you win yourself a job?
I suppose so. I mean, that's his fourth year will be next year, and they'll have a decision whether or not to pick up an option for him or not. For a first-round pick, this is just, it's a disappointing return.
Yeah, no, it really is. I called him the delicate, somebody referred to me as a delicate flower, this guy who swims like he's a beast, and I always feign these injuries. And he looked at me one day and says, Dan, you're a delicate flower. And I'm like, you know, that's sort of applicable to our man Ricky Pearsall. I mean, not that anybody who's taken a bullet in the chest should be a delicate flower, but some people just don't have... They're just not wired that way physically to play football at this level.
Well, it's interesting about Ricky, and we're going to break here in just a moment, but with Ricky, I mean, all these injuries started popping up when he got to the Niners. You know, Dan, you look at what he went through in Arizona State and Florida. He had a foot bruise that he sustained in practice one year in August of 2022 when he was at a preseason camp with the Gators, missed a couple of days of practice, never missed a game, was never on an injury report once in college. Then he comes to the Niners again. The gunshot wound aside, That's a beyond football circumstance, so I won't, you know, hold anything there to him on that one. But yeah, the stuff with the knee, I believe it was that Jaguars game last year is when that injury first popped up. I mean, it is just, ever since he arrived, he has just struggled to stay healthy, and that's something that he's not really had to deal with in his football career.
One name that you have to keep in the back of your head as to why you got to give this guy an opportunity is Steph Curry, because there's people that start their career for the first 5 years with an ankle injury, and before you give up on the guy, you just got to, you never know, I guess, is at the end of the day.
I that might be the cleanest way you can compare Stephen Curry to Ricky Pearsall right there. Dan's a good point, though. It is a good point. Speaking of injuries, there was a lot of them for the Giants this week. Giants are testing the 49ers to see who is more injured. The Giants don't even have a power station to help them out in that regard. We want to talk about a really crappy injury, a couple crappy injuries that happened this week. But also, Buster Posey, you are on the clock. We'll get into that conversation on the other side. And this is all brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good.
It's Sophia with an F, Franklin with the Y, and if you're looking for some bubblegum dum-dum podcast, then you are in the wrong place, baby. Whether I'm reminiscing on the trials and tribulations of working in the corporate world to recapping today's latest reality TV show, you're going to want to pull up a chair and stick around. It's a good time and always 100% unfiltered. Follow and listen to Sophia with an F wherever you get your podcasts.